When it comes to our morality, Skip Heitzig warns us not to get comfortable with just fitting in with the rest of our culture.
The consensus of the group should never determine your morality. Well, the world does it. They sleep together. They live together. They kick the tires of the car before they buy it. Well, why can't we? We should have that freedom. Now you're letting the world determine what is right and what is wrong. That's a huge mistake.
Make the connection.
Is there anything that causes as much heartache and sorrow as unrequited love? I don't know if you've ever experienced this, loving someone who just doesn't feel the same way about you, but suffice to say it doesn't exactly lead to healthy relationships. We'll see an example of that today here on The Connection, as Skip Heitzig continues through the book of Genesis. Now, interestingly enough, God is probably the one who experiences more unrequited love than just about anyone else. But hopefully, what we'll study today will inspire us to make sure we return as much of the love He has shown us as we can. Before we get started today, here's a little something from Chuck Smith that can help you with your faith.
Way back in 1987, George Michael had a hit song simply called Faith. The lyrics repeatedly said, "I gotta have faith." That's all fine and good, but what does it mean to have faith in your spiritual journey at some point, and not by sight? Discover how you can walk daily by faith with Chuck Smith's book, Faith.
I think that as long as I am alive, I will be learning lessons of faith. The disciples said, "Lord, increase our faith." And that's my prayer, Lord, greater faith.
It's available right now from The Connection for just $15 when you call 1-800-922-1888. It's true that you got to have faith. So find out what that means, what faith is, and how it works in your life. Order the book Faith by Chuck Smith for just $15. Call 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectionradio.org.
God's love and desire for us moved Him to have Jesus die on a cross for our sins, and He did that long before any of us loved Him in return. It's an amazing example of selfless love, and it stands in stark contrast to the relationship Jacob had with some of his wives, and to some of the relationships we can sometimes have with each other. Stay with us today here on The Connection to find out more.
And make the connection.
Open your Bibles once again to the book of Genesis, chapter 30. Let's join Skip Heitzig for today's study.
About 800 years before Moses was ever around, there was a guy whose codified law ruled the ancient Near East. His name was Hammurabi. And you may have heard of the Code of Hammurabi. What he codified in writing governed people from Persia to the Caspian Sea, from the Euphrates River to the Mediterranean Ocean. And in the Code of Hammurabi, it was stated that if a wife who's married to a husband has a maid because she herself cannot bear children, if her maid bears children on her behalf, they will become the property of the wife. It was standard operating procedure. It was the very law that Abraham and Sarah lived by. You remember the story with Hagar. So, it was just what people did. It was, you could say, everybody's doing it. And not only is everybody in the world doing it, but my own family has done it. My grandpa did it with Hagar. They had Ishmael. You have a classic case of conforming your character and behavior to that of the world. But what does Romans tell us? It says that we're not to be conformed to this world, but what? Transformed by the renewing of our mind. We're to think differently than the world thinks. And here's the big point. The consensus of the group should never determine your morality. Well, the world does it. They sleep together. They live together. They kick the tires of the car before they buy it. Well, why can't we? We should have that freedom. Now you're letting the world determine what is right and what is wrong. That's a huge mistake. It was a huge mistake for her to do this. And yet God is superimposing his will in bringing the 12 tribes of Israel. She gave him Bilhah, her maid, as a wife. And Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God has judged my case. And he has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore, she called his name Dan. Dan means judge. Danielle is God is my judge. So this is where the tribe of Dan comes from. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister. And indeed, I have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob, his wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. And so Leah said, a troop comes. So she called his name Gad. Gad zooks, a troop comes. It's as if these two women are trying to start the first baby boom. And notice it's a competition between them. One is trying to get her husband's love. The other feels left out because, by the way, in ancient times, it was seen as a divine disfavor to not be able to bear children. And it was a sign of divine favor and blessing if you were able to have children, especially sons to carry on the family name. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, and Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Happy, Asher. Now Reuben went in, he's probably about 8 or 9 years old, that's the firstborn of Leah, went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. And Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. I'll tell you what, I'll work you a deal. You can have our husband tonight and sleep with him in exchange for your son's mandrakes. Now, this shows me that Jacob had stopped having intimate relation, has stopped sleeping completely with Leah altogether. So that Rachel was in firm control of her husband. Now they're swapping a deal. What is a mandrake? Technical term, Mandragoras autumnalis. What it was a perennial fruit that grows in the Mediterranean regions, bluish flowers in the winter, dark green leaves, and a yellow plume-like yellowish fruit in the summer. It also had a root. It was a carrot-like root. And the belief, the superstitious belief, is that it was an aphrodisiac. It increased sexual appetite, and it opened the womb, enabling barren women to conceive. It did not. It was simply superstitious. She's following the superstitions of her time, trying to get more children. When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, now he had no idea what's happening. He's a hard day's work. He comes in and he yawns in the tent, wants to grab the Jerusalem Post and sit down and read the paper. Jacob came out of the field in the evening. Leah went out to meet him and said, You must come into me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. I told you it was a weird chapter. And he lay with her that night. Interesting. It's as though she's believing this ideology. Well, God hasn't helped me. And my husband, he's not helping me any. So maybe these mandrakes will help. Also, they were called love apples. You know, I've trusted in the Lord. Where has that got me now? That same philosophy I've heard over and over again on a number of different levels. Well, God isn't doing anything, so I guess I have to help God out. That's what Abraham and Sarah thought with Hagar. That's what she is thinking. And he lay with her that night, verse 16. Their marriage had been reduced to a legal contract. And God listened to Leah, evidently then means she had prayed, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Now, the writer, Moses of Genesis, wants you to know that it's because God did it that they had the child. God listened to the prayer and gave her another son. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband. And so she called his name Issachar, which means hired or for sale. And Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I've borne him six sons. And so she called his name Zebulun, which means to dwell. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah, which means judgment. It was very difficult to be a woman in those days. Here's just a little insight. When a woman was about to give birth, they brought in the food and the singers and the wine, and they were all ready to party hardy if a boy was born. If a girl came out, well, congratulations, but pack up the wine and the party attire, and we'll see you next time. She's competing with her sister. She now has 6-0. That's the score, 6-0. And she has a daughter. The daughter is mentioned. But her name is Judgment. Verse 22 is a highlight. Then God remembered Rachel. God listened to her and opened her womb. So after the mandrake madness was over, that didn't work, but prayer did. She's trusting in the Lord. She's leaning on him, and the Lord opened up her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And so she called his name Joseph, which means to add, and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. Now, Joseph we'll get to later. He dominates the last 11 chapters of the book of Genesis. He is the one who was sold out of jealousy by his brothers into Egypt. He is in Potiphar's house. He will eventually become a ruler in Egypt, in fact, the prime minister, and deliver the world from a famine. But his name is interesting because it really is a prophecy. The Lord will add to me yet another son. Now, she's going to have two children. The second son will be Benjamin, but he won't come around for a while. But Joseph, her one and only up to now son, is born by natural childbirth. So far, it's a sad picture. It's a dysfunctional family. It's a family that never learned how to resolve conflict, and children were placed in the middle of adults who are at war with each other. Now, I want you just to think for a moment about how couples resolve conflict. And people do it different ways. Some people resolve conflict by not resolving conflict. They never deal with it. Don't want to talk about it. And they give the cold shoulder to the mate. Honey, what's wrong? Nothing. It seems like, oh no, nothing wrong. Why do you ask? Oh, but honey, no. And it's awfully hard to snuggle a bobcat. But that's how many will try to resolve it, just by not resolving it. Don't deal with it. Don't talk about it. but it's still lying there. Other people deal with conflict by just kind of letting it simmer. They'll be very passive about it, but they just let it simmer. And then it simmers a little more and a little more until eventually they can't control it and they blow up like a volcano and take half the house with them. Others place their children in the middle of their conflict. If that ever happens, please don't be surprised if your children grow up to handle conflict exactly the same way it's been modeled to them. If you use your children like these two gals as weapons, that's a mistake, pitting one against the other. I see husbands and wives using their children as weapons, especially if there's a divorce. Other parents worship their children. Alienating their spouse, it's now all about the child, all about the baby, all about that child, and their whole life. So what happens is when the empty nest comes around, they're so used to neglecting the spouse and not nurturing that relationship, and it's all about child-centered parenting. Once the child leaves the home, they look at each other and say, "Now who are you? And why should I remain with you? Give me a good reason." Best way to resolve conflict is to sit down, look each other in the eye, get a mediator if need be, a counselor, a pastor if need be, somebody skilled at biblical counseling. But put your heart on the table and deal honestly and be submissive to the Lord's will. And ask for forgiveness. And then move on. Jacob did none of that in his family, and neither did these two gals. And you'll see their children as they grow. Enough said. The second part of this chapter, and we want to go quickly, is the workplace. He works for Uncle Laban. Now watch what happens. It came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go. For you know my service and what I have done for you." You betcha, 14 years of that service. And Laban said to him, "Please stay. If I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake." Then he said, "Name your wages, and I will give it." See the word experience? Some of the modern translations rightfully translate it divination. "For I have learned by divination that the reason I'm so blessed is because you're here." That is more accurate. Laban was also superstitious. The idea that omens and signs would predict the future, because the pagan belief is that evil forces control the world, not a sovereign God. Now he uses God's name because he's clever. "The Lord has blessed me," Yahweh is the word, "has blessed me because of you." But don't be fooled by this cat. He's not interested at all in Jacob's God, only the blessings that will come from Jacob's God. "Stay. Dude, I feel so much better when you're around." Because he was blessed because of his sake. It's a beautiful principle. And it's a promise. God had promised Abraham that the descendants of Abraham would be the source of blessing to the world. "Through you and your offspring, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." And it's wonderful when God blesses other people because of you. It's a wonderful thought, is it not, that you could be the reason that other people get blessed? Well, it happened with Isaac. Isaac went down to Gerar, and King Abimelech of Gerar realized that God blessed him, the king of Gerar, because of Isaac. Later on, chapter 40, 41, Joseph will be down in Potiphar's house in Egypt, and Potiphar will be blessed for Joseph's sake. Laban realizes that's happened to him. Jacob said to him, verse 29, "You know how I've served you, and your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it has increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming." And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? And he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. Let me pass through all of your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats. And these shall be my wages. So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come. When the subject of my wages comes before you, everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. Now that means, I don't know if I can trust you or not. You have one con artist facing another con artist, and they don't trust each other.
Well, relationships with people can be challenging. It's heartbreaking when we don't get the love we want from them, and it's also pretty tough when we aren't really sure if we can trust them. Fortunately, we don't have to worry about those issues in our relationship with God. He proved His love for us on the cross, long before we had any regard for Him, and He's shown Himself to be trustworthy time and time again. Well, our time is just about up for today, but before we do anything else, let's say hi to Skip and Lenya.
This month, we've been telling people about Chuck Smith's book on faith, and boy, does he have faith. Why do you think it's important for us to learn as much as we can on this subject, and what have you learned from faith from Chuck or his book?
Chuck is an unusual person in that I think he has what the Bible describes as the gift of faith. He has the gift of looking at a situation and wondering if God is in it, enough wonder to take a step into it and see if maybe it's the Lord or not. And he always, I remember, would be willing to do that with people as well as maybe investments for the kingdom's sake. But he would take people that most of us would go are pretty shady, and I don't know if you should trust him. But
Skip Heitzig, Greg Laurie.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, you know the lineup.
Mike McIntosh.
and yet he saw that potential that Jesus saw in people like Simon Peter or Matthew the tax collector. And I think it's a gift of faith. It's sort of like Peter had a gift of faith when he saw the man who was at the gate who, you know, looked for something, and he said, silver and gold have I none, but what I have I'll give to you. And he reached out his hand, that's the gift of faith, and picked him up. It's one thing to say those words and walk by. It's another thing to stop and pick the guy up, because if you're wrong, he'll fall down. And that's just a legitimate gift I've seen on a number of occasions with Chuck. And you know, some of the books that I've read, and you've read, Lenya, like George Mueller's, his story about how over 6 years, like 10,000 orphans he took care of on faith alone, not wanting to let any man know his need, but just God. And those are the kind of stories that increase a person's desire to see God move and probably prime the pump of faith enough to step out in it
themselves.
It's
beautiful that faith is the evidence of things not seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful. Have you ever had, you know, was coming to Albuquerque a step of faith for you?
A huge step of faith. And not only that, but when we were purchasing two radio stations, and it was Chuck's faith and his steps of faith. And I remember calling him and asking him specifically and just how excited he was and encouraging he was. And you know, saying, well, count me in. I want to go and I'll be one of your customers if you do it. So, it was his faith in the realm of media investment that was really a catalyst for us here.
And I think faith is contagious. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see someone operating in it, it emboldens you to operate in it as well.
Well, thanks, Lenya and Skip. And if you'd like a copy of today's teaching, it's available for just $6 when you call us at 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. Plus, anything you share above that suggested donation will help us continue to bring you these daily studies. In fact, it's because of the support of listeners like you that people all over the world are being blessed by this daily time in God's Word. That wouldn't be possible without your help. So if this time studying the Bible each day makes a difference in your life, help us do the same for others through the support of this ministry. Just call 1-800-922-1888 to find out how you can share a one-time donation or how you can be a monthly supporter. And you can find out more when you visit connectionradio.org. And thank you for your support of the Ministry of the Connection.
And make the connection.
Finish going verse by verse through Genesis chapter 30 next time, so be sure to join us. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.